name of God the Holy, and of the Divine Trinity. Amen. At Yale University's Center for Faith and Culture, there's a program that has become, I did not, a blockbuster. Last spring, 160 students wanted to enroll in 42 available spots. 100,000 people viewed online speakers for program events. 100 students and faculty attended dinners on themes related to the program. The name of the program was such a rock star, Life Worth Living. Classes included students from a variety of faith traditions and from none, from different countries, from different socioeconomic levels. In class, they engaged the answers and guidance provided by a variety of religious and philosophical traditions, and they engaged with each other. Each student must write on positions espoused by others in the class. And finally, each one must write on their own perspective, their own answers to the question, what makes a life worth living? What's groundbreaking about this program is that it neither attempts to provide the answers, nor does it assert that there is no correct answer. According to one of the instructors, many students find this opportunity to wrestle with what really matters, life-changing, to engage with others who believe differently, to listen, discuss, persuade, and be persuaded, not to agree to disagree, which is really just a conversation stopper. The message then is that it's not okay to disagree because disagreement is dangerous, so let's just push it under the rug. No. They truly engage with each other and with the material they study. This chance to have genuine, mutual, ongoing conversation about things that matter is why students flock to this class. Now, today's gospel might take us back a bit, or a lot. It's from Luke's gospel. You know, the same gospel that has the beautiful baby Jesus stories. The gospel where Jesus is always good for a comforting word, especially to the downtrodden. Yeah, today not so much. It doesn't sound like a good sermon, does it? Well, I might wonder if somehow we skipped into Matthew or Mark by mistake. In looking at this text today, first of all, I wonder, who is this guy? He's talking about fire and discord and family breakups, and everything seems to be collapsing real fast. Whatever happened to Jesus' meek and mild? Well, keep in mind there are legendary hopscotches around a bit. You don't get it straight through most of the time. Today we're in chapter 12, but all the way back to the beginning of chapter 9, or actually the middle of chapter 9, Jesus turned his face toward Jerusalem. For us, it's only a few weeks ago, but it's quite a while ago. He's been going around telling parables, trying to get across to his disciples that things aren't the way they've always been, that there will be opposition to this message he is preaching. And he's on the way to the cross. But mostly, he's upsetting the status quo. And his disciples seem to have some peculiar kind of amnesia about this. They listen, and then they either miss the point, or they promptly forget what he just said. And time is passing. The cross is coming nearer. And with that time passing, Jesus' opportunity to tell his disciples everything he wants to tell them, everything he wants to convince of them, is growing shorter. And Jesus knows what's coming, and or at least that it's going to get pretty messy. Is it any wonder if he's getting a little touchy, feeling the pressure? Now, family systems theory tells us that when someone in the family system tries to change their behavior, the system itself, all the other people in the family, tend to try to maintain the status quo, to not change. So in families, if somebody changes how they are with others, it can be a lot harder than it sounds. Because others will try to act parents included, is apt to get upset and resist the change. Because it's different. It's different for the kids, but it's also different for the other parent who's been doing the single parent thing just fine things. Change requires a lot of work on our part. It's hard. And it tends to feel like we're losing something. And there is a loss, even if the only loss is that it's familiar. And that's just in the families. Consider what happens in large organizations or a whole society. And Jesus is proposing an entire inversion of how things work. The last shall be first. Being really good at going to worship doesn't make you a better person. Doesn't make you any better than the homeless guy down the street. Power and position won't count for anything. Money doesn't equal virtue. And you know, this is not the way everyone knows the world works. It's a change. Is it any wonder that Jesus' followers would resist some of this change? Jesus is telling them the truth, that what matters usually comes at a cost, that the pain of changing, of getting beyond our own resistance to change, and the resistance of others, even those that are really close to us, well, that could even get us killed, just like Jesus. In the very early days of the church, this wasn't hyperbole or metaphor. People could and did get killed for living like Jesus. The charge wasn't so much being Christian. The charge was atheism. The followers of Jesus didn't have the right attitude for a lot of things. They wouldn't worship the emperor. They wouldn't. They associated even with the dregs of society. They didn't even want to climb the corporate or government service ladder. They wouldn't join the army. In short, they were considered dangerous nuts who didn't believe in basic decency. And their families didn't like it either. In an honor-shame culture like that of the ancient world, it was a terrible thing to have a relative who was such a crazy person. Like we would feel about having a mentally ill, homeless person who had committed a terrible crime. That approximates how they feel about it. This is what Jesus is talking about, the discord and shame even inside families, and how this would be the cost for the disciples, and how everything would try to make them turn away from what really matters. So what does this have to do with us? We don't have the same costs associated with following Jesus. Not here, not now. Some have said that makes us lukewarm Christians, interested only in cheap grace. Perhaps. But perhaps in our very different world, our challenge might be different as well. Not dangerous, perhaps, to life, but definitely dangerous to comfortable living, dangerous to the status quo. Perhaps our challenge might be what those students at Yale learned from them. The challenge of working out for ourselves just what makes a life worth living. Having those conversations, not arguments, not agree to disagree, but genuine conversations about what makes a life worth living. How Jesus and the church factor into that life. Conversations with people who are really different views. Perhaps other faiths or other denominations, or none. Or maybe very different views from the person next to you in the view. But genuine mutual exploration of what really matters. So that we can work out how we might best learn and be encouraged and